Good morning. This is WMUK's Arts and More, bringing you arts and culture from Southwest Michigan. I'm Earlene McMichael. Coming up, I bring you the fairy tale story of acclaimed protest folk singer Sixto Rodriguez from Detroit. For decades, he worked hard manual labor jobs, believing that his albums hadn't sold well. It turns out they actually did sell well overseas, where he reached the cult status on the order of like the Rolling Stones and Elvis. Thanks to a documentary about his life called Searching for Sugar Man that won an Oscar in 2013, Rodriguez is finally finding fans in America. Recently, I talked with Rodriguez by phone. He performs December 11th at the Kalamazoo State Theater. Let's take a listen.
Sugar Man, won't you hurry? 'Cause I'm tired of these scenes. For a blue coin, won't you bring back all those colors to my dreams?
Your family hails from Mexico, and there is a certain type of sound of more traditional Mexican music.
But yeah, I consider myself urban as opposed to rural. So yeah, that's, I think, a sharp difference, a distinction. Because yeah, so the guitar is very central to the music, and so it was invented in Spain. So that's my central, you know, I play guitar. And I like everybody from West Montgomery. I like the different riffs. I love all the music that are out. Yeah, but my appeal, I guess, is to English-speaking audiences.
Mm-hmm. In your home, your father, didn't he play the guitar a lot?
Yes, he did. It's a family instrument. You know, certainly he brought it into the house.
I was reading somewhere that the music that he would play on the family guitar, it would bring you to tears.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, my dad, you know, very heartfelt.
What shaped the kind of sound that you have?
Certainly my father, you know, is very central in my background. You know, he's my role model. And so, yeah, he's very outspoken, very hard worker. I think I inherited that as well as the music.
What musical artists were influences on your music? Who did you like when you were growing up?
Well, being from a large family, I heard whatever my siblings were listening to, and they listened to everything. Anyway, but personally, you know, I always say Jimmy Reed as an influence, a heavy influence on me, and because of his, he wrote it, he sang it, and he played harmonica to it, and you know, Jimmy Reed is one of my central guys. And so, you know, it's to style. I describe my style as a percussion guitar. You know, I do rhythm on it.
The sound of Jimmy Reed. If you had to describe it in a word or two, what would that be for some of our listeners who may not be familiar with him?
He was like Ray Charles.
Okay, like the blues.
Yeah, like that, but with a guitar.
See? I see.
A guy could play harmonica, play guitar, do the leads in it, and then do the vocals. See? And yeah, he was an extraordinary gifted individual. And we had to search for radio, you know, through radio. We'd hear these obscure stations playing this kind of music.
And then over time, my understanding is that you played different bars, different places, and
yes,
you had to kind of adopt the kind of American kind of music that was around, kind of doing covers of other people at the time.
Exactly.
Before you kind of developed your own sound.
Sure, yeah, I think that's one way to approach it, and that's the way I did it.
Here's what intrigues me. We have racism today in America. I have to imagine there was that much more when you were coming up in Detroit. And I'm trying to figure this out. How is it that you got yourself in a position to be able to even cut an album as someone of color in Detroit back in the 60s?
Yeah. Oh, how did I achieve my success?
Well, how did you even get that first album? You know, did you approach someone? Did someone approach you? How did that opportunity open itself up for you?
It's been a lot of introductions. And one person would introduce me to another person, and another person would take me to another person, and like that.
What I mean is to get someone interested in you to even want to have a record put out for you the first time. Was that hard?
I would say so. Let's see. There was a guy named T.J. Fowler, and some guy that I played for took me to meet him, and T.J. Fowler took me to this other guy named Harry Brock. And Harry Brock, I think, is Jewish background. And he put out a single on me, and it got noticed. It was 1967.
Yeah, I think it was around 1967.
So this is how I started out. So people get interested in that there's a buzz going on about something, you know, in music. It's a very small world.
So the two albums come out, and they obviously didn't sell very well. Why do you think that was the case? I remember in the documentary there were some things perhaps maybe that it alluded to, but why do you think they didn't sell at the time?
Well, I really clearly wasn't a business person and in this event. But that's all well and good.
At some point did you say, you know what, this music thing, I'm done with it?
Oh, well,
early on, I'm talking early on, like in the 1970s, when the albums didn't sell.
Well, you can't do as much of that, which you'd like to do, that's all. I think I stay with music, but not in the sense of doing as much for it. You know, you don't apply as much to those themes. And, you know, like that, you just step away from it, but you don't give up the art form.
What I'm trying to do is go chronologically to all of a sudden you find out that those albums that you released in the early 70s had made their way to Australia, and then you were popular in Australia, and so you went to perform there in the late 70s. Were you surprised to learn that you had suddenly become popular in Australia?
Yes, I was. And the thing is that, well, as you said about the word chronology, you know, that life thing isn't chronology, you know, I mean, for some that's the way they look at it, but, and reflected in quote-unquote this career, it seems that it's been out of joint, disjointed success and not knowing about it, but anybway, withholding that information is also, you know, it's questionable.
Rodriguez never saw royalties from his albums that were sold overseas, but his songs have been re-released under a different label, and now he's getting paid for those sales. Now the biggest shock was how popular you had become decades later in the late 90s in South Africa, which was then in the process of dismantling the government sponsored system of racial discrimination against black people called apartheid. Did that shock the pants off of you to find out how popular you were there?
Quite a lot.
And then so you went on in 1998, I believe it is, you went on to do 6 consecutive sold out shows in South Africa, and the venue had 5,000 seats. When you were on the stage and you looked out into that audience, what did you think?
Very much a triumph of the story. Personal and also, you know, just the global recognition. Because they can't get around that success, and that's really the whole picture, because it's extraordinary.
Then your story was made into an Academy Award winning Best Documentary. What has all this taught you about fame?
Oh, well, that's a fleeting thing, and also that it's a double-edged sword.
Rodriguez performs Saturday, December 11th at downtown Kalamazoo State Theater. For more details and a longer interview, visit our webpage at WMUK.org. You can hear Arts and More Fridays and Saturdays on WMUK. And check us out online. For Arts and More, I'm Earlene McMichael. Thanks for listening.